All right. Well, it seems like Dayton's taking a little wire with his laundry, so we're going to go on and continue without him. Hello, and welcome again to another episode of the Hold On Guys podcast. I'm your host, Roy, of Royce of Streams. You can find my information by typing Royce of Streams into any major social media outlet, such as Linktree, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, and YouTube. Today, I'm joined by three guests, John, who many of you know already. Hello. Additionally, we have two new guests today, Skylar and Jasmine. Would you both like to introduce yourself to the listeners, perhaps tell everyone who you are, what you enjoy, etc.?
Ladies first.
I am Jasmine. Things that I enjoy. Mostly socializing, talking. I like a good winery, and I love a good book.
Cool. Skylar?
Yeah, things I enjoy. I'm really big into movies, so I've got the Regal Unlimited. I'm always at the movie theater whenever I'm not working, and currently trying to teach myself how to make films and also animate things with Blender. So, yeah.
Very cool, guys. All right, so normally I would throw it to the guests and ask, like, how everyone's week has been going. But there's something that I found out recently that I have to share. I feel compelled to share. Excuse me, compelled to share with everyone. So, is everyone familiar with the YouTube guy Binging with Babish, like his whole cooking show?
Yes.
Okay.
No.
So
at least I'm aware of it.
Phenomenal guy. Just like he seems like a really cool dude in general, but he had a rank. He does rankings of different stuff, and the most recent episode was Pop-Tarts, and he was ranking different types of Pop-Tarts, which I'm all for. But he was ranking unfrosted cinnamon Pop-Tarts, which I didn't know existed. Who psychopath would choose unfrosted cinnamon Pop-Tarts over the frosted cinnamon Pop-Tarts?
That feels like it should be a screening for psychosis to be like,
exactly.
Okay.
That's my point. Okay, glad. I'm glad we're on the same team on this one, Jazz. Skylar, it seems like you have some differentiating opinions.
Yeah, honestly, like, I don't mind it. I know it's a little weird, but sometimes you don't want the extra sugar. Sometimes you want just like a little bit of what's inside, and then you just chill with something else, you know?
So,
you guys, but not minding it is different than actively choosing it.
So it's interesting you said that, because there was 1 gram more sugar in the unfrosted one than there was in the frosted one.
No way. Okay. That's ridiculous. Okay. Never mind. Take them away. That is insane.
In that respect, I would totally understand, except it wasn't. And I was blown away by that fact. And
is this like a, you know, recycling often doesn't end up getting recycled type of level of inception in your brain?
Yes, exactly. It's just like, well, why do this if there's gonna be if you still cost, you know, an extra gram of sugar to eat the less fun Pop-Tart?
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. So now I have to know, what's everyone's favorite Pop-Tart?
S'mores.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. That. But if I had to pick a different flavor, it'd probably be the maple and brown sugar one. I really like that one.
Ooh, okay. All right. My first instinct is s'mores as well. So I'm glad we're all team s'mores.
So
there was another one out there, but I can't think of the flavor. What's up, John?
I'm led to understand that there is a chocolate chip cookie dough Pop-Tart.
Yes, that's the one.
I have never tried this, and I am a fiend for cookie dough. So, my question is, for those who have tried it, how is it? Because that would be my answer if I probably had tried it before.
All right, so you have to have it warmed up, okay?
Yeah.
And then when it gets warm, so you know when you have a cookie that's like 3 minutes out of the oven and the like ooey gooey in the middle? That's what the chocolate chip cookie Pop-Tart tastes like.
Okay,
and
well, that's
the same kind of texture, and it's just mwah, chef's kiss good. But if we're just going untoasted, then s'mores wins right out,
s'mores
like out
definitely
of the bag.
Wins by that.
Boom.
Yeah. What do you consider a Pop-Tart as a food? Is it a dessert ravioli? Is it a strange crepe? What is the Pop-Tart?
I think it is literally a tart by definition. It has a crust, right? And then it has a filling to that crust. It is by definition a pastry level tart. It is most definitely not a dessert pasta.
Okay.
Well, could it just be like...
May I inject a reason why maybe that's where my brain went? Because as a St. Louisan, we have a certain food staple.
Oh, God.
The toasted ravioli. It is acceptable. I won't say that it's good, but it is acceptable. And I know that Washington, D.C., their specialty food that people talk about is they have very specific homemade, I guess, tarts, but I always consider them just Pop-Tarts of any kind. I do not have an English food background, so can you explain, like, what is an ideal tart, and where does that come from? Because I have to say, I am
traditional.
I am food illiterate.
Tart is like a small pie, and it usually has like a shortbread kind of cookie base, and then it has some sort of filling. I mean, I guess you can change the cookie base. You can make it more of a ginger snapper, etc. But like, yeah.
Okay.
But because I have family who lives in D.C., and I have like an uncle who specializes in Italian cooking. Like, I know a ravioli, and I went to school in Missouri. I know a toasted ravioli. And in fact, I've made my own chocolate dessert pasta, but a Pop-Tart is just not in that class.
That's totally fine. My ignorance is on display for all to see. Normal behavior, for me, but, what is the best tart filling then outside of the Pop-Tart world in your mind?
Ooh, like a key lime or a lemony, like an ideal tart should be like, it's a small
like
pie,
a
right?
So
it's like
cream a cream tart.
Yes. It's like a small thing that you have in the summertime sitting out in like 75 degrees and sunny with an Aperol spritz and you have a sprig of mint on top. Or like you could be sitting by a fountain in Italy having like a nice, like something crisp, lemony, limey, refreshing.
Could this also be a refreshing finish to a breakfast tea in an English setting?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
See, now I have been to a tea room and have had a proper English breakfast kind of your three servings, the little sandwiches followed by, I guess they were tarts that I had. Now, lemon cream.
Hold on, guys. Hold on, guys. I'm about to lose some friends here. Maybe. How do we feel about chocolate and mint?
I love it.
Great combo.
100%.
Oh.
No.
Hell no.
Okay.
No. Absolutely not.
Why would you ruin chocolate with mint? Why the hell would you do that?
Accentuates it. Mint chocolate chip ice cream is elite.
If you were to put chocolate in your toothpaste, why would you do that?
Exactly.
Hold on. These are some fighting words here. This is like one of my favorite flavors of ice cream. It's like chocolate and then mint chocolate chip. And then Rocky Road. God, am I an old man?
Your taste buds are deeply confused.
I believe that as someone who has some friends who are Ukrainian and know just how much mint goes into their food, I think this might be a bit of anti-Ukrainian discrimination. I'm sorry, but mint is delightful on all sorts of things.
I love mint, but mint does not belong with chocolate.
Correct.
I just don't agree with that sentiment. Mm-hmm.
I think it's fantastic.
I think it makes for a wonderful
contrast. So we can't go to either of your houses for Thanksgiving. It's me and Roy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're not serving mint chocolate chip ice cream on Thanksgiving. You know, we got other desserts for that. We got to go traditional. Apple pie, pmkin pie, you know. There's no room
pecan
for mint
chocolate chip pie.
On Thanksgiving. Pecan pie is S-tier. But hold on, guys. I guess then my question following up on that is, what is everyone's favorite chocolate flavor combination? Chocolate plus one other discrete flavor, what is the best combo?
Hold on, guys. Have you ever had the chocolate bars specifically from Walmart that have the cookie butter inside of them?
No. Okay.
That is a
cookie butter. Just try it. Try it. Ooh. And they have a key lime one, too.
Okay.
See, I'm torn. It's, I'm at a tie with like a very close third. The tie being chocolate caramel and chocolate peanut butter, with the very close third being chocolate and coffee.
I am gonna step out just a little bit. Maybe you'll step out onto the veranda with me. Okay. If not, it's fine. It's a beautiful day, though. I personally think that chocolate hazelnut is king. I can full on embrace girl dinner and just have Nutella and anything, and I'm very happy.
That is a fair point. Hold on, guys.
Skylar, do you remember me in high school when I would come to school with just Nutella for lunch?
Yes.
What, just a jar of Nutella?
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah, like a queen. Yeah. Incredible.
Yes. Nutella just is amazing.
Stunting on the other kids.
Oh, God. So then, would it be like chocolate with any type of nut as like a category, or nut butter, and then other things? Because, I mean, like, because chocolate peanut butter, chocolate hazelnut, I mean, like, really kind of any chocolate nut.
Chocolate almond, chocolate cashew, chocolate peanut. Yeah. You really can't go wrong.
I guess it's a sweet, subset. Salty, sweet. Like, if we want to go specificity, I think hazelnut is the best combo, but I will agree that just peanut, or nut plus chocolate is delightful. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm sorry that I've said nut so many times.
Yeah, it's kind of nutty. okay, and then I'll just quietly see myself out.
Yeah, of course.
Only took 3 episodes to get there.
So I think we're all in agreement that chocolate hazelnut is delicious.
No. I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to. Oh. I'm gonna jump off the veranda. I am not a Nutella fan.
Okay. Like,
I've had it before, and it's good. I just don't understand why people go bonkers over it. It's just hazelnuts. That's it.
But how often do you have hazelnuts in life? I mean, for me, it's a pretty rare flavor, and for it to be so implemented in this one delightful pairing. I may not have hazelnuts.
Can we ask why hazelnut is a rare flavor? I mean, it's a tree that grows in America. Like, you could grow your own hazel. You could. It only takes 2 years for them to start to nut, and then you can collect them off the fruit. Like, why? Why do you not more common?
I was just about to say. Why did you choose that phrase?
Oh, she knew what she was doing. go on. 2 years to nut. Go right ahead.
But my point is that, like, you know, it should be a more common flavor that we have if it's a thing that we can grow here, right? Like,
all right. I looked at Google said that disease and pest issues, it's grown in major producing regions like Turkey. There's a high cost and labor challenge and a relatively low consumer demand. So, while the four of us may like hazelnuts, most other people don't.
Is this a similar problem to why isn't pistachio more widely regarded as a delightful ice cream flavor?
Oh, pistachio is.
Pistachio is a great ice cream flavor.
I was the one lone child screaming in the darkness. You're correct, character from Hey Arnold. Pistachio is delicious. I don't remember which character it was, but they went to the ice cream man and they got the pistachio and everyone made fun of them. And I shed a single tear in solidarity with my animated bro, who also accepts that pistachio is delightful.
It was when we got married, we had a pistachio cake from the Italian bakery the Italian restaurant that catered it. And it was fucking phenomenal. And like so much so that I bought a bottle of pistachio cream for the bartender, and the bartender was like inventing drinks with the pistachio cream, and it was delightful.
I had my first drink recently with pistachio cream, and it was so incredibly good.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
This is clearly like the episode where none of us ate dinner before we got on. So if we're going to continue in this frame, hold on, guys. when it comes to desserts, we've mentioned tarts, we've mentioned Pop-Tarts, we've mentioned ice cream.
Jazz mentioned a chocolate dessert pasta that I really wanted to go back to.
I'm fascinated by that too, but I did want to ask, generally, what's your favorite dessert? Just not like a specific flavor, just, you know, dinner's finished, you got some time, it's already prepared, what would you have?
I love ice cream.
Yeah, ice cream, like, and it's so, like, immediately accessible. You just, pop, spoon, done. If I don't have ice cream available, or if I have made cookies, then it's my cookies for sure. Okay. Yeah.
I'm definitely a cookie and ice cream fiend, but I gotta say, I have turned around now that I've started making my own pies. A nicely made pie, and especially like a cold pie, like your since the key lime has been mentioned already, delightful.
Yes.
I love to just take pie. A graham cracker crust, whatever pudding I am obsessed with at the time, usually tapioca or chocolate, and just make a dessert pie with that and some heavy whipping cream, and then maybe add some flavors in there to give it a little more robust. But I just love a nice dessert pie.
I will agree. And I love baking. I love making stuff myself. I love cooking for other people. I like baking for other people. I cannot stand making pie crust. It is such a pain in the neck.
Really? I love making pie crust.
Well, it's extremely dependent upon, like, the humidity and the air quality. Because if you're in a very, like, a subtropical climate, you have so much humidity in the air, so much water in the air, in the humidity, your pie crust is going to be very wet, so you have to, like, adjust and change, and it's just a pain in the balls. So, like, I typically do not make pie crusts. I wish I had more.
Where patience. Are you that you're making pie in an outside kitchen?
Well, it doesn't matter. If it's humid, it's going to be humid inside the house. I don't have a dehumidifier in the house.
I mean, having lived in Florida, I did invest in a dehumidifier.
Right.
They do help.
I will say, though, I'm with you on just the... I am never sure what the right amount of time defrosting phyllo dough is and getting a good pie crust out of it. Maybe it's just a sign that I need to stop using pre-made phyllo dough, but I will say the making of the crust is always the most the most annoying part of it, which is also part of why I like so many of the dessert pies that are just like a essentially a cobbler filling when you do like a chocolate pudding pie or something like that, or a key lime pie, which Jasmine is a resident seeming just expert. With a key lime pie that does not have a top, why would it not be considered a cobbler, or are we just saying it wrong?
I think a cobbler is just a subtype of pie.
Which usually it's a fruit pie that is missing a crust over the top.
Also, correct? A cobbler doesn't really... Do cobblers have edge? Like, are they made in the traditional circular pan? Because I picture a cobbler Dutch as, like, a square usually. Sheet that doesn't have, like...
Same.
Edges.
It's just like a lasagna pan.
Okay. Yeah, so a cobbler doesn't have it has a structured bottom, but it doesn't have a structured edge, like a traditional pie that has a structured edge.
So the edge is the important thing then, not the topping, but the edge.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you don't need a top. Doesn't a cobbler have a different type edges. Of
top too? Like, isn't a cobbler like a biscuit top? And then like a pie? It can be.
You can definitely can be. You can put stuff over the top to essentially kind of broil the top over and have...
like a crumble.
Yeah. Yeah, which is part of what makes a cobbler really delicious when it's done right, but I don't think that's necessary. Well, then, I guess I'll ask, are people pro-cobbler or pro-pie if you had to pick one of the two?
Oh, pie over cobbler for me.
If it tastes good, who gives a shit?
Fair. Like,
as long as it's not mint chocolate, like, I'm good with whatever. On that note, though, there are like a lot of fruit that mint goes well with. So I would be okay with like, yeah, fruit. Yeah. I'm pretty sure like raspberries,
strawberries.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. I don't know if I'd want it in my pie, but like a blackberry. Yeah. Ooh, that'd be
maybe good. Like in the whip, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like a blackberry mint pie would, I would enjoy that. I don't know. If guests would, but
that
would.
Sounds so good. Can I come to your house for that?
Yeah, really?
If you find yourself in St. Louis, sure.
Blackberry mint pie.
Yeah. I tell you what, I didn't realize that blueberry tapioca is a very common pie combo, but I was just making a pie for a game night and stumbled upon that, and it really is delightful.
Blueberry tapioca?
Yeah.
Never heard of that.
Neither.
Gives it some nice creaminess that I really enjoy. Okay, if we're just all food all the time today, hold on, guys.
Oh yeah, I think so.
Have you all had boba tea before?
Oh yeah.
Of course, we all live in America.
Yeah, and boba shops are popping up everywhere around here, especially.
I am here in the heartland, here in Missouri. And sure. It seems like we're mostly late to all of these food trends that the rest of the country experiences first. And I have a lot of coworkers who either don't like boba or do not specifically like fill-ins with their boba.
Mm.
That's me.
I reject that outright. I love it. I recently had a dragon fruit lychee fill-in. It was so good.
Is that how you say that?
Yeah, I've lychee? Always been saying lychee. Is that how you say it?
It's lychee.
It's lychee? Oh, well, you learn something new every day.
We need to have a list of the words in this podcast that we're unsure of the pronunciation, because this is the second time this subject has come up on something. I think I said femoral or ephemeral.
Well, we have a doctor.
Also, pronunciation is based technically off of, like, the dialect of who's saying it, right? So I say lychee because, like, when I was in Colombia and people by the equator where they grow it, that's how they say it, right? They don't say lychee. But if you're saying it with an American accent and American dialect, it could be fair that according to our pronunciation rules,
yes,
it could be lychee, right?
Vowels that exist in other languages that don't fully exist in ours.
Although I do think that the E's modify the Y in that, and that even in American pronunciation, it would be lychee.
Okay.
So does that mean, I'm pretty sure now I can put this podcast under the educational category now, because we're teaching people on how to say stuff.
Hey, we got a doctor in the house. So
doctor does not mean I know. It's not a PhD in English.
Oh, I can put this under the medical category then.
Yeah. Move over, sawbones. I was going to ask, though, what is everyone's favorite fill-ins with boba tea? And Skylar, you said that you're not a fan of the fill-ins. That's fine. Do you mind explaining why?
I personally don't like that they oftentimes get stuck in the straw and they're just like it's hard to drink around it. And then they already put like a majority of the drink is like half ice to begin with. So it's like, I don't need any more fill-ins. Like, just give me my drink, and I like the flavor of what I'm drinking. I don't need extra stuff. And I also I'm trying to limit all of like the fake sugars and all of the weird foreign stuff that I don't know what's made out of, you know. And I'm already kind of taking a treat with the boba as it is, so I don't really want to take it too far.
Can you give an example of a fill-in? Because I thought it was just the boba, and that was the end of that.
Oh,
yeah, but there's like different flavors of them. There's like the regular tapioca, and then they have like the dragon fruit ones and a bunch of different fruit flavored ones. And
they have like the clear boba that's not tapioca based. It's like a juice filled pocket. So
that's not boba. I thought that was boba.
No, boba is the traditional tapioca balls by definition.
Oh, the balls that don't burst in your mouth.
Which is why some places will just say fill-ins instead.
Correct.
But
now, that being said, mess with some like freeze-dried dragon fruit or like mango or something. Like, put that in there. Absolutely. That's cool.
Okay.
I mean, if you're trying to avoid unnecessary sugar, you should pick freeze-dried dragon fruit over mango. On the fructose content, mango is going to be a lot higher than your dragon fruit. Dragon fruit's like mostly water. It's like a less sweet kiwi.
Okay.
Hold on, guys. Podcast is not endorsed by any medical entity.
Well, I am myself very... I like the traditional when it comes to boba. I like that tapioca pearl. I have always liked tapioca as a flavor, so that's kind of my favorite. But lychee or lychee, regardless of pronunciation, I also... That's probably my second favorite. It's such a nice pop of sweetness to go along with, like, I don't know. I think it's an elite flavor.
I haven't had enough of it to really like have like a favorite.
Okay.
I just like whenever I go with someone, like, what are you getting? Like, I'm getting this. All right, cool. I'll get that. You know, like, this is, you know, what flavor is it? All right, cool. Sounds good. Like, and that's really the extent of my boba thing.
Okay. Follow up for you.
Yes.
Hold on, guys. Because I know Roy is a bit of a alcohol connoisseur. Have you ever had, I tried a thing recently where it was a pear lychee sake and it was to die for. So pears, I'm wondering, like, have you ever tried lychee in like an alcohol or a liqueur? Because I really feel like that would have a different level of appreciation, you know?
So I've had soju before, which is a Japanese and or I think Korean. They're different, like it's the same letters. I'm sure they're pronounced differently, and I know that the alcohol quantity and how they're made are different, but it's still quote unquote soju. And the ones that I've had have not been like, you know, strawberry or blueberry. They've been more, we'll call, you know, Eastern type flavors, lychee, pear. I feel like I've had like a, like, was it, is it plum?
That sounds like it'd be good.
One of Japanese plum. I think I've had Japanese plum. Yeah, those are delightful. You know, they're made, they're obviously made in a different country, and so there are different, you know, processes for them. And I'm sure everyone here that's been to a different country and has a had anything in a different country, it tastes wildly different and better because there's less crap in whatever they're putting in there.
Usually so.
And like, it's been really, really good. So to answer your question, I don't remember like a lychee specific thing, but yes, I've had stuff like it and it is delicious. But wherever you got that thing, please send it to me so I can have it.
I've had a plum sake before, which was rather great. But that's the only flavored wine that I've had of that type. Missouri has a lot of dessert wines, fruit wines.
Ice wine?
John.
Yes.
Nice.
As somebody who started my drinking life in Missouri, I'm going to put out there, Missouri has incredibly angry grapes, okay? Mm-hmm. Your wine is terror. I need you to leave. I need you to leave Missouri. I need you to experience non-Missouri wines. The wine there is awful.
I'll say this. A proper Norton, I like a dry red, a big dry red. I do like Nortons from here. I will agree with you on the angry wines because compared to every other wine I've had, it does seem like something about the tannin levels gives everyone a headache.
It's the soil. It's something that is in the soil that I really feel like makes the grapes incredibly angry. I mean, we did bury a whole lot of nuclear material
from the Manhattan Project in our state, so that could very well be. Might be all the nukes we have in our limestone caverns. I think we have the most of the tactical ICBMs in the U.S. outside of NORAD.
So maybe the wine is radioactive?
That's what I'm saying. Have you considered, though, that perhaps Missouri wine is how one of us gets superpowers and changes the world for the better? That's what I'm drinking to tonight.
So maybe I could be a combination of Zendaya and Tom Holland from Spider-Man? That's what I'm getting?
Yes, you can be both of them, but specifically them in that lip sync competition where Tom Holland kills it with an umbrella.
Wasn't there a Spider-Mary Jane at one point?
Wasn't there what? I'm sorry.
Say that again?
I know there was a Spider-Gwen, but was there ever a Spider-Mary Jane?
Yes, there has been in the comics. There's been everything in the comics because everything's been done and there's nothing new.
Has there been an Aunt May Spider-Man?
Yes. Yes. That's,
really?
That's Into the Spider-Verse. No. There's one.
Get the fuck out of here.
Not Into the Spider-Verse, the film, but the Spider-Verse event. There is an Aunt May who becomes Spider-Man after her Uncle Ben dies. Yes. It exists.
Wow.
Yeah. Truly. Truly.
Wow.
Yeah,
I just got real goosebumps. Quick,
before we get off topic of the alcohol, I wanted to chime in here and well, my recent trip to Barcelona, I fell in love with vermouth. And I'm not really a big wine drinker or drinker in general, but I tell you what, I love it so much that I'm actually considering making it from scratch for the Howl of Scream trip that I'm taking at the end of the month. And because we're having like a big party with a bunch of people. Roy knows about it.
Yeah. Okay, Skylar, if you're making your own vermouth, I want some of that, as I have to send Roy the sake. We need like an alcohol shipping train.
Oh my god. It's not technically legal to do that.
Not technically.
Podcast
not doing illegal stuff.
And now a sponsor from Drizzly.
But no,
why can't you ship other things to people?
I think you need like a license to do it. It's like one of those things.
It's across state lines.
Yeah.
They repealed Prohibition. They didn't repeal a lot of weird regulations that happened during Prohibition.
But you can do it for wine. You just can't do it for anything else?
I'm not entirely sure, but
it's not really condoned. Like, I'm sure you can send anything through the USPS if you don't tell them what it is, but
yes.
I don't know how legal it would be.
Because there are a lot of taxes, specifically, import taxes, even between states sometimes with alcohol. Not basically, if it comes from another state, they can be subject to different regulation. So I know working at a beer company myself, because every state has their own local, municipal, and state regulations, there's a lot of weird stuff when it comes to shipping things between states, which is also why usually there aren't many distribution companies that will go across state lines. They stick to one state usually, and only stay within those borders, which causes a lot of problems, honestly, because it doesn't always make sense for some of these companies not to want to go right across the river to another large city, but they can't.
Well, it's also complicated with like marijuana laws, because I know like in Minnesota, they have alcohols that have THC in them as well, like in their, you know, liquor stores and stuff like that.
Calling it right here. If
Wisconsin is very against that.
Mm-hmm. And if Anheuser-Busch does not somehow get a copyright on the This Bud's for You for weed alcohol, I swear to God, the greatest mismanagement of a company that's ever existed. Anyhow.
Mm-hmm. I will agree with you on that one.
What? Aren't they owned by a Belgian company now? They got some good guys in their PR department.
Just need it to be taken off the scheduled list, y'all. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all. We free us from these
everything
burdensome regulations, Donald Trump.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, he's for raising taxes clearly with this whole big beautiful bill. So if you could tax marijuana, that would make a lot of money.
You know what, Donald Trump? This is my personal appeal. Legalize it, my guy. I know you don't take it, but legalize it, and then we can tax the fuck out of it and have rural hospitals again. Wouldn't that be nice?
Ooh, so, nice. You know, that was a bar. Okay.
As a musician, every once in a while, I do have a bar or two.
I'm just lost here. What's a bar?
A bar of music is a measure of music.
But it's also used in like rap culture where it's like if you say something like prophetic, you're like, it's a bar. So like I was
with friends, that is straight up music and poetry.
You know, I got one fuck per person, so don't fuck it up because I can't reimburse it. And somebody was like, that's a bar. And I was like, yeah, that's true.
I'm a polyamorous person. I was around folks and once said, you know, I think of it less of loving in quantities and more in loving in qualities. And they all just went like, whoa. I was like, God damn it. I hate aphorisms, but they work so well on people.
When you said I'm a polyamorous person, I thought you were about to start another bar. And I got really excited. And then it just turned into a story. And not that the story was bad, but I was a little disappointed that
But you were waiting for rapping on the podcast.
I was waiting for rapping, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Or at the very least, like, William Shatner-esque, quote-unquote, singing.
A la that Ben Folds album that he did.
What?
Ben Folds. Hold on, guys. Ben Folds. Have you all heard of this musician?
No.
Yeah, Ben Folds 5. He was a judge on the sing-off. That show where everybody did a cappella. Yeah, he was cool.
He also had a university a cappella album where he specifically did two that were with some a cappella groups. I think one was like University of San Diego. I don't remember them all, but basically greatest hits of all of his songs, but done by university a cappellas with two that he arranged himself with a couple of choirs. Anyhow, Ben Folds, for whatever reason, had a collaboration with Weird Al Yankovic where he played the piano on Why Does This Always Happen to Me? And I think that is because he worked for the same label on that William Shatner worked on for his pop album that he wanted to do, which is called Fear of Pop, by the way. William Shatner then had Ben Folds be basically the person who set music and just did basically all the musical work of putting together that album, Fear of Pop, and is most of the piano instrumentals. I think he also might play the drums and guitar on it too, because that was the time period right after he released his first solo album, and he played a lot of the instruments on it. So he was really at the height of his "fuck it, I'll do it all." And speaking it is somehow a decent experience to listen to William Shatner, not quite yet have a stroke on a recording.
In a similar vein, does everyone know who the voice actor H. John Benjamin is?
Of course.
Also, no.
Yeah.
There's so many things I don't know.
Have you seen Archer?
No, I have not ever watched a single episode of Archer.
Have you ever watched Bob's Burgers?
Oh, he's the dude that's Bob in Bob's Burgers.
He's Bob. Yeah, exactly. So, H. John Benjamin recorded a jazz album with a jazz band. And H. John Benjamin does not know how to play the piano. And he played the piano the entire time during this recording of the jazz album. And furthermore,
it's on band.
The band. I haven't seen the
video. Video. There are musicians who are angry, and it's incredible.
The musicians backing him did not know that he didn't know how to play the piano. So he's there just kind of like plinking at the notes, and the entire band is like, what the fuck is going on the entire time? And it is absolutely amazing in every sense of the word. If you ever want to feel good about yourself, just listen to the quote-unquote music.
It's a transcendental act of comedy, in my opinion. He actually did go on to a program that is mainly run by Sam Cedar called The Majority Report. And actually, that's where I saw the video of it. But yes, the idea was he was going to record a second album 10 years later after having learned to play the piano as like a learning experience and kind of like a, I don't know, hey, look at the growth that exists. But then he recorded it, and I don't think he ever practiced between. So he's done a second album. I don't know if it's out, but he did talk about it. Yeah.
Anyway, Skylar, You mentioned you were going to make your own vermouth, and then we kind of away with that.
Oh, no, yeah, what's up? So I'm trying to decide if I want to make it from scratch or if I want to just kind of buy some bottles. But the problem is it's hard to get Spanish vermouth in that's actually, like, reliable and good and sweet, because all the stuff that they have is kind of dry. I've checked all the stores in my area.
Yeah,
and I'm looking online, and I do actually have a relationship with a supplier at my job. So
nice.
I mean, I could get some, but not before, because we're actually closing for vacation here in like a week or so. Gotcha. So not before I actually go up to the event and do it myself. So that's why I'm thinking of probably making it from scratch. But also because I'm doing like a film project for my class right now. And I'm going to use that process as kind of the subject for what I'm making. It's kind of a not so still life, and I want to take like basically take like common still life, like what you would see in a still life painting, and I would take those as like establishing shots and then like play around with the scene from there for like a bunch of different things while making vermouth for the party and everything like that. So that's kind of my intention with that. But yeah, that's it's cool. If I make it myself, it's gonna be, I'm gonna have to make it like a week before the actual party, because it has to, like, you know, it has to age and, and settle and, you know, get primed up, because you have to, like, you have to put it with a bunch of botanicals in there, and you're basically mixing red or white wine with a spirit of your choice, and then you put, like, basically the key ingredient is wormwood, and then like a bunch of or whatever the modern day like relative of that herb is. I don't know if we actually have wormwood anymore.
I thought we weren't allowed to get it. Like, the United States wasn't allowed to.
I think that's why in America we use something else. It's something very close to it, but it's not actually wormwood. Yeah, so that's like, it's like a whole process, and you have to like basically boil it up and you know, let it sit in your fridge for a week, and so it's gonna be fun. And it's gonna be an interesting
wormwood time. Is illegal in the United States?
I'm not sure. I know that the component in absinthe is illegal here, right?
It says it's not, like, AI says it's naturalized in Canada and the United States, so...
Interesting. Legalized in 2007. Interesting.
Okay. Nice.
I had a question about your vermouth. How do you like to drink your vermouth? Because as a previous bartender, the only time I ever think of vermouth is basically with martini. Or other cocktails, do you like it by itself?
Okay, so the thing in Spain, their vermouth is different. So, like, it's not like something that you put into a cocktail. It's like a fortified wine, right? And so you drink it by itself with like with ice, like some olives and like an orange slice. And some places will like put a little bit of gin in there to make it a little extra strong. None of the places I went really did that, but that is known in some areas of Spain. So it's a totally different type of vermouth. They know that it's not being used as a mixer or something to be put in with other drinks. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of get wacky with the flavor combinations, and kind of every shop, every like cafe, every restaurant in Barcelona, particularly where I was, they all have their own special like recipe with different herbal blends and stuff like that, and they guard it with their life. And so it's really kind of cool. No place you go is gonna have the same vermouth, and it's all delicious, man. It's so good.
That sounds dope. I have always liked fortified wines. When I was starting to drink as a baby drinker, I, like so many aging British men, decided on port, and I don't really drink many fortified wines anymore. I'm basically a teetotaler at this point in life, but I really like a fortified sort of dessert style wine every once in a while. My tastes are in the extreme. When I'm having like a red wine for dinner or just to have, it's like a Tempranillo or a Malbec or a Norton, something that's going to be a heavy red. But man, I like the weird spirits sometimes on their own rather than as a compliment in a cocktail.
Have you had Brenovan?
No.
While we're talking about country-specific liquor or wine stuff, Brenovan is an Icelandic spirit. It's its own thing. It's not a wine. It's not a vodka, etc. It's its own spirit, and it's made out of a lot of like herbal stuff. So it has like licorice and other stuff. I'm sure it's written on the bottle somewhere, but licorice is like kind of the main deal.
And we feel like that would taste good.
Oh, I've had it before. It's quite yummy. Mm. It is quite yummy. Have you ever had Drambuie?
No.
No.
I feel like an uncultured swine compared to you all. Teach me all the things.
Well, Drambuie is scotch. It's just scotch. It's scotch, but it has floral notes to it. Like, it has floral additives to it. So, like, Brenovan is to, we'll call it vodka rum, as Drambuie is to scotch.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I've never had a Drambuie. I was much more like a, I'm going to find something to go along with particular liqueurs that I liked. Mm. And actually, if we bring back mint is so delightful when you do it with some Grand Marnier and something to just, like, usually a mild, like, I would do some Grand Marnier, some mint, and then a bit of either soda water or, you know, ginger ale, something like that, just to offset some of the alcohol. But I love orange liqueurs.
But you guys are talking more things that are like brown liquors. And brown liquors, Rihanna has told us, get you in trouble every time.
I don't listen to billionaires.
Brenovan is clear if we're going like that, but yeah.
I have blacked out many times in my life, so that is advice that was well warranted that I chose to ignore in some college fraternity years.
See, it's not the blacking out I worry about. It's the friskiness where I'm like, oh, I'm going to wake up with regrets.
See, I have a voice for radio, meaning that was never an issue for me.
It's so rough out here with brown liquor. Wake up just terribly regretting my life choices.
I lost a choir job thanks to brown liquor one night.
Ooh. Who'd tell?
It was a Saturday evening, and it was a combination of things.
It was a cool and dreary night.
No, it was there was an opera production at my undergraduate university that had just ended, so people were kind of crazy the weekend following, and it was a Saturday night house party that was a real rager. I got to that party late because I worked all throughout college. I was a busboy at a local restaurant, finished that shift, went there having not really eaten anything, ate some snacks at the party, and they were playing Tour de Francia for a while. That part I handled just fine. They were having people slap the bag and chug wine for as long as they could. The record was somewhere in the 30-second mark. I beat that by a full minute and then continued my night. I had a tall Collins glass of scotch, and that was where I went wrong for the night. I don't know what I was thinking, but I slept completely through my call time for choir the following day, and did not wake up and able to process things and do things until probably like 4 p.m. And at that point, my then choir director had decided, like, well, I got no explanation for where the fuck John was. Wasn't a soloist today, but wasn't in the choir, so we're just not going to continue having this relationship. And that was fair. So we all have our brown liquor Well, I mean, I acknowledged a drinking problem and I no longer have it.
This is why I stick with gin.
It's just called getting older.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't think of any time that like I got so epically blasted that it affected like a job or a relationship or something in that profound of a way.
I can't say it's really affected me all that much. I mean, like, I've made poor choices, but it hasn't affected a job.
I think this whole like brown liquor is bad is a little silly. Because there are, like, you know, it's just, it depends on how much you drink. If you have, you know, two shots.
To be clear, I did say that in jest as a whole, doctor. I know that, alcohol is alcohol.
Well, you're not the only person to have said that, like, in my life, just in general.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot of people that are like, I only drink vodka. I'm like, okay, well, that's nice. But if you have 8 shots of vodka and I have 3 shots of whiskey, like, that, you're still drinking way more than I am.
Well, hold on, guys. I actually had a question for Jasmine on the topic of health and alcohol. There was a recent, pretty wide-ranging study that just came out that asserts, yes, any amount of alcohol is a huge risk profile for a wide variety of cancers. Not as huge as a lot of other things, but it increases the risk pretty substantially compared to non-drinkers. Is this something that you're aware of or have seen?
So this is something that I am aware of, right? Like alcohol fundamentally is a poison, right? Yes. You are ingesting a toxin. You're choosing to do so. She says as she slips a glass of wine. but, you know, there are shades of gray to this. Like, do I believe, you know, they used to say like, oh, if you have a glass of red wine, it's heart healthy for you. Do I believe that? No, there's no benefit to this for you. It is that you feel good, but it is a toxin that makes you feel good. Yeah. And are you likely to live longer without any sort of complication if you drink no alcohol? Maybe, but also, quite frankly, I'm here for a good time, not a long time. Like, I have family members who have dementia and shit in their 90s. Like, is it really worth me living to 90 if it's not a good quality? Like, I'm gonna have my glass of wine and I'm gonna live my life. And like, maybe I could have avoided the 2% increased chance in my likelihood of cancer by not doing that. But also, if you live long enough, right, your telomeres get shorter, your cell repair gets less effective, you are going to get some sort of cancer by de facto you living long enough. And if I'm really doing my job correctly, everybody lives longer, so y'all get cancer. Drink your wine.
That's true. I like those stories like where you meet, you know, Jane, and she's 105 years old. And they're like, what do you do every day? And I drink 7 Dr. Peppers and, you know, I eat a pound of ground beef and I go to sleep at 8 o'clock. And then the headline is, you know, great, great grandmother drinks 7 Dr. Peppers a day. And that's why she lived to 102. And I always find those stories to be hilarious, but also just very, you know, very silly at the same time. And it tells me that whatever's going to happen is going to happen. It doesn't, like, you know, yes, if you drink 900 glasses of wine every day, then yeah, you're going to get, you know, sicker quicker. And if you don't, then
but it's also, there's almost anything that you can do in excess that's going to hurt you. If I have excess milk every day, I'm going to get an anemia. If I have excess matcha lattes, the same thing that will happen. If I have excess fruit, I will develop diabetes. Like, there's no winning.
Exactly.
You just have to decide to live.
And, like, take it from my great-grandma who lived to, like, 98. She, like, toward the end of it, all of her friends were dead. Her husband was dead. She was the only one left. She was a sweetheart, and we visited her all the time. But toward the end, she was like, all right, like, what am I still doing here? I'm ready to go, like, get me out of here. Like I feel like at a certain point, like, you've lived your life, right? Like, so I don't know if I'd want to live that long.
Exactly.
I also enjoy the stories of people, women who have lived to like 99, 102, whatever. And they say, what's your secret? And like, I divorced my husband 7 years ago and I loved it every minute. And like, yeah, that makes sense.
That being said, I do wish that Betty White had made it to 100.
Yes, agreed.
Yes.
That does hurt my heart to know that she was a week shy or whatever it was. It's like, so close.
I was in the post office the other day.
She was a comedian. She has to have thought that was pretty funny, though.
Yeah.
Like, she probably at least took it with the right attitude.
Right.
Yeah. Honestly, I really want to be like her. I feel like in my 60s, when I retire from like medicine, I'm going to start auditioning for comedy roles just so I can be the fun old grandma. Like, that would be so great. That's the legacy I want to die with.
Oh, man, that would be cool. I could see you doing that, Jasmine. Yeah.
It'd be great.
That'd be cool. Let's make that happen. This is your start right here. This podcast in 2025, this was your entry into media and film and TV as we know it.
I agree to do it. Skylar's going to film it. It's going to be great.
There we go.
Hell yeah.
Can I, hold on, guys. May I pitch some things that are perhaps, now that we are a podcast that is putting out episodes that are timely and in the world, as of this recording on September 9th, I would like to let people know your local farmers market would love to have you. And at least for me regionally, an interesting thing I learned from going to my farmer's market was that the pawpaw tree, the fruit is edible and is very similar to like a cross between a banana and a mango. I got to try a new fruit for the first time. It is only in its season of ripeness and harvesting for a roughly 2-week period. You get to learn about things like this in your local area by going to farmers markets and letting people who are real residents who've lived there all their lives tell you about their experiences. So if I can plug one thing tonight, it's that.
Is this going to be like a Bob Barker thing where each episode we plug something new?
I don't like every episode of the local co-op.
That seems like a lot of work, but
if you guys come to visit me in Oregon, we can do our own muscle foraging.
Ooh. What? Your own what?
Hold on, guys.
Muscles?
Muscle?
Like
a muscle. Okay, all right.
Muscles, M-U-S-S-E-L-S, like the seafood. Yeah, so they grow like abundantly.
Just go to the gym here. Why do I have to go to see Oregon?
Don't you guys also have like the goy ducks or whatever they're called? Like the
ooy ducks.
Yeah, ooey ducks. Yeah. That's what they are.
Yeah, they do.
I'm sorry, what are the ooey ducks?
Like, oh God, how do you explain? Like really long clams?
Yeah,
that's a good description.
How do you? You just okay. Just look it up.
Just Google it. Yeah,
well, I don't really know how to
geoduck. But it says like AI says the pawpaw tree tastes like a blend of banana, mango, and pineapple. John, would you agree?
Yeah. Closest thing I've had in terms of a flavor profile. Is probably jackfruit, if you've ever had that. It is softer and creamier than that, though. Kind of scoop it out of...
Ooh.
So you cut it in half, you take out the rather large seeds, which are not really anything. I suppose if you had enough of them, it would be bad for you, but they're not used for anything. They're not tasty. But the actual fruit that's left in there, sort of like an avocado shell around it, you scoop it out and it's delightful. And I imagine there's probably some incredible person in my area who could make a pie out of that. There we go.
That sounds delicious.
I have two pawpaw fruits that I'm going to have tonight after the show.
Are you going to put them with mint?
No, I don't think so. Probably not. The only fresh herb I have right now is cilantro.
Gotcha. Well, hold on, guys. I hear the teapot going, and I'm going to get it real quick.